Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Liberty Report. Today, our co-host, Daniel McAdams, is in Falls Church, Virginia. He will be visiting us by Skype. Daniel, welcome to the program today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Very well, and anxious to have a program slightly differently than we have done before. But we both had spotted an article which was of, I think, significance, and it appeared on Zero Hedge. And the headline is pretty dramatic. Not that this is brand new. I think where it came from is as important as what they're saying, because the article's thrust is that maybe we're playing footsies, you know, with ISIS, and maybe they aren't the enemy that we have described. But the title says, Bombshell Report Confirms U.S. Coalition Struck a Deal with ISIS. I can't imagine. And the thrust of this, Daniel, and I know you've looked at this, is that we actually coordinated and helped and allowed some to estimate thousands of really tough ISIS members as Raqqa was being taken over, that they left, and we wanted to make sure that the radicals got out. That sounds pretty bad if even half of that is true, but that's essentially what BBC is saying, and they're not exactly, you know, non-interventionists on our side of these issues.
Yeah, that's what makes it, that's what really caught our attention, the fact that this is a BBC investigative report, which that's great that they actually did it. But according to Colonel Ryan Dillon, who's a spokesperson of the Operation Inherent Resolve in Syria, they reluctantly admitted that, yes, this did happen. They did strike a deal. I think about 4,000 people were able to leave. But more importantly, they took tons of weapons with them. They left Raqqa. There were some truck drivers that they hired to do it, and they seemed to scatter to the wind. The U.S. knew all about the deal as it was being struck.
You know, because of this issue, and it's been around, you and I have talked about this a whole lot, for many years, we've known that our weapons got into the hands of ISIS. There's been charges made over the years, and they continue to be made, that we created Al-Qaeda and ISIS. These are such radical charges that nobody wants to believe it. But just looking back over the internet, I wanted to see when our weapons got in the hands of the enemy, and when we were doing this type of dealing, and it goes all the way back, and all we have to do is refresh our memory of what the Iraq War was all about, how they misplaced things, weapons were missed, and billions of dollars in cash got missing, and so in some ways, Daniel, we can't really be shocked, oh my goodness, when did this kind of problem happen? We sort of have complained about this going on for a long time because we don't think our government's being upfront with us who the enemy really is and what they're doing. It makes it the whole process, the whole foreign policy, totally contradictory. And of course, one of my goals have always been, if we have discovered a discrepancy in what the news is portraying, then we have to try to clarify this and understand it ourselves. And I think the American people are somewhat lackadaisical, aren't too interested in that. But I think they'd really be shocked if it went back to our foreign policy, even back to the days that Ronald Reagan was president and Jimmy Carter was involved and Brzezinski was involved. I mean, this is just so messy. It's not like the old days when somebody bombed us, as what happened in Pearl Harbor, and a declaration of war was made, and a big war was fought and over in 3 years. This is so different. This is perpetual war, I guess, for perpetual peace, and it looks like they're achieving their goals.
Yeah, and as we talked about just yesterday on the program, it's the principles of interventionism and non-interventionism, you know, and this is, as you point out, you know, Al-Qaeda at least was midwife, let's put it that way, by the U.S., as a way to bring down the Soviet Union. At the time, it was an intervention that made a lot of sense to the Brzezinskis of the world, who view the world as a chessboard for them to play on. But then the implications of it are very serious. But you know, Dr. Paul, what made this Zero Hedge article a blockbuster, in my view, was not just this revelation was so important, but it also contained this press conference that Secretary Mattis, the defense secretary, gave over the weekend, where he said, hey, we're staying in Syria for the long haul because there's still ISIS here. So on one hand, we let ISIS go, and then we say, well, we can't leave because ISIS is around.
And then on occasion, you'll hear our administration taking credit for having defeated ISIS and won the war in Syria. At the same time, they're preparing for the long term, and that's what Mattis is doing. We're going to stay as long as they want to fight. Well, there's going to be radicals around for a long time, and they don't want the war on terrorism to end because there are some special interests that benefit from this. And just recently, there was an article to show that, I think just a couple days ago, that there were 11 strikes by the United States and allies in Syria. Like, the war hasn't really ended, and yet ISIS is pretty well defeated. Assad essentially has won the war, and I guess if we just leave, maybe it's a public, a public announcement that, you know, we really messed up. We shouldn't have been there. Assad didn't have to go, and he's there, and he is right now in charge of most of the population of Syria. But they're still fighting, and they're not leaving. And there's been statement that we have quite a few bases which we don't acknowledge in Syria, but you know. Daniel, I don't think we got permission from Assad, and I don't think the proper authority to quote that we're there legally under international law because the UN said we could go in. I don't think that's the case.
No, and even Mattis tried to make that case over the weekend. He said, well, we have permission from the UN to go after ISIS in Syria. But that's not the fact, and I don't have the number in front of me, but the UN resolution that dealt with attacking ISIS, it did say within the confines of international law, and that would mean the U.S. has to have permission from Syria to have troops on Syrian soil. But you're right, Dr. Paul, there was a discussion of bases, and it was actually our NATO ally, Turkey, that now has twice talked about U.S. permanent bases in Syria. They just said the Americans have 13 bases in Syria, 13 military bases. We shouldn't even have one of them. So what does that tell you about our long-term commitment to Syria?
You know, somebody else that lives in the neighborhood, the country of Iran, they're talking about and may have a base there for all I know. What's going to happen there is that there is one other particular country that will not tolerate that, and it happens to be Israel, because I think they've made a statement that's not going to happen. So in spite of this victory, so to speak, and the destruction and the defeat of ISIS, at least a temporary defeat under these conditions where we could move ahead, it looks like the seeds have been planted, you know, for a perpetual war. It looks like Mattis will achieve this, and they will be able to scare the American people into saying, you can't leave now. Isn't that the problem we had? Bush won the war, and then Obama came along, and he changed the rules, and he just left, and that's why we're in this war, not recognizing the fact that actually that was part of the plan that Bush had when he left office.
And that's exactly true. They refuse to see the writing on the wall. What's happening now in Syria is the result of an intervention gone wrong. Surprise, surprise, yet another one. The U.S. activities in Syria were intended to get rid of Assad from the beginning. That has completely failed. And so now it's searching around for another pretext. You know, I did find it interesting that Mattis in the same press conference said, we're not going to leave before the Geneva process has traction. And that's important because the Geneva process is really going nowhere in terms of settling the political situation. But one key component of the so-called Geneva process is the idea that Assad must step down. So they're using that as an excuse. Hey, we can't leave until the Geneva process is done. And by the way, the Geneva process says that Assad must go. So they're almost grasping at straws, but it almost also shows their true intention, which is going back to the beginning.
Yes, and we've been talking about recent history, especially, you know, in the past 16 years that we've got very much involved in this area. But, you know, the policy goes back a little bit further, and I mentioned just a little while ago to some degree, and that is what is the philosophy of the United States other than the fact that we have always used certain individuals to fight some of our battles. So this was not a secret. Ronald Reagan was part of this, and he says, well, we have to stop communism. This is the Cold War. This is very serious. So he endorsed the idea of using and helping to radicalize Islam to go in there and tease with the Soviets to bring the Soviets into Afghanistan. And then Brzezinski, when he was working with Carter, he was bragging about the fact that, see, I told you I could get those dumb Russians and Soviets to come in, and look at what happened. Great victories occurred. And that is the reason we brought them to their knees and we ended that war. And some people have a different opinion that communism didn't end because of the planning of Brzezinski going with these radicals. It ended because communism is a failed system. And matter of fact, what he did in this process was plant the seeds of another war, and that is the perpetual war on terrorism, which doesn't look like there is going to be a victory over terrorism in the near future.
Well, trust me, Dr. Paul, here in Northern Virginia, there are a lot of very nice houses that are being built on the profits of the perpetual war on terrorism. So the people here are doing very well, indeed. But, you know, the U.S. has used the proxy forces. Look at how they've used the Kurds to retake Raqqa, and now they sort of dropped them like a hot potato, and the Kurds are furious about this. So, you know, there is a pattern of trying to use this, but it always seems to backfire on us.
Yes, and, you know, I think one bewildering result of what's been going on has been that Assad didn't have to go. And he's in the driver's seat. Iran is not weakened. Iran, if anything else, has been strengthened. And there's more chaos than ever. How many democratic states use cash carelessly like the others do? How much more liberty has been delivered to the people of Iraq? And you compare some of the things on what's going on under Assad and also actually in Iran, and compare it to the places that we disrupted. I mean, hardly would we say, yeah, we did a good job in Iraq and Afghanistan is settled. And I guess it's a good time for us to go over and make investments in Libya. And exactly the opposite is true, but they never quit. I wonder if they ever sit back, the neocons I'm talking about, the people who perpetuate this policy, I wonder if they ever sit back and, how did in the world did we allow this guy, Assad, this one individual, to beat all of us? And we're powerful. Every country surrounding him is opposed to this. Then all of a sudden, Assad seems to be coming out on top. And I was just wondering whether you gave that any thought. And who gets the credit for, if you want to give credit, to Assad maintaining power in Syria?
Well, you know what the neocons would say? It's all the fault of those Russians. How dare they come to the aid of their ally when he asks for their aid? You know, but you always talk about how people vote with their feet and they vote with their bellies. And we've mentioned this on the show before, Dr. Paul. According to the UN itself, over 600,000 people have returned to Syria now that control has returned to the government. So obviously what we were being told about Syria, just like what we were being told about Libya, was a lie. People weren't leaving because of the government. People were leaving because of the intervention. And now that the government's back in power, whatever faults it may have, the people feel somehow comfortable enough to go back to their homes. I think that's basically all you need to know about it.
Yeah. And, of course, some people always argue when there's a little bit of confusion and understanding what's happening, they say follow the money, and there's a lot of money involved. And they just this past week finally passed the $700 billion budget for militarism, not for defense. And yet we know there's a lot more money than just that because they hide a lot of the spending. But that's a lot of money to take out of the pockets of the American people. And, you know, right now they're having this big discussion on how we're going to lower the taxes on the middle class and make everybody happy. But they never talk about, well, why don't we allow more money to stay in this country? They complain. They say, well, the business conditions are such, and we need to change them because business people are keeping their money overseas. Well, how much money do we send overseas? Billions and billions of dollars. Maybe that's something we have more control of. The businessman, who's supposed to have a little bit of freedom of choice, might do something in their best interest, but the American people, if we can awaken them and the Congress could wake up, you know, we could literally change that course instead of pumping all this stuff out and making a few rich people here. And like you mentioned, you may see their houses not too far from where you are, and they're getting taxpayers' money, and they're making a lot of money, and they're not going to be voting for our foreign policy in the near future. I wonder if you'd go ahead and sort of summarize what we're talking about here today.
Well, my final thoughts would be the other thing that you mentioned that we haven't talked about much, and that is Israel. Netanyahu has said that he will not allow the Iranians to stay in Syria. He views all Shia militia as Iranians. But Russia's foreign minister Lavrov said that there's nothing in the ceasefire that they have made that says that Iranians or Shia have to leave. So I think that's a potential fault line in the future. I think Israel will follow up with its threat to attack Syria. So we haven't seen the end of this yet. We'll keep an eye on it.
Right. And one thing I would like to see happen from a discussion like this is that the American people will wake up and see what's happening. Always frightened me to either repeat or listen to, because I didn't want to hear it, is that the United States created ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And for a while, I just didn't want to believe it. I still don't like to believe it, but reality is reality. And even that little bit of history I cited, even all the way back to Reagan, that this was a wise foreign policy to radicalize Islam in order to fight those terrible, terrible Russians who were the Soviets at the time. Not that you excuse what the Soviets were doing. That's not the point. But the whole point is that policy of radicalizing a certain group can backfire, and that's what's happening here. Maybe unintended consequences, but sometimes when we do these things, there's blowback too, because we suffer the consequences. And I think so often about the three reasons that bin Laden gave for participating, encouraging, and celebrating 9/11. He said there are three reasons that they were very upset. One was the way the Palestinians were being treated. One, a decade of bombing and killing thousands, if not millions, of people in Iraq. And also, important to him was a religious thing. And this can't be ignored, but generally it is. And that is that it was meant in Islam that foreign military forces should never be on the peninsula of Arabia. And yet we have had bases there, very much involved, and we're still, even if we didn't technically have a base there, technically we're very much involved militarily with Saudi Arabia in the war in Yemen. So these are the principles that we should be looking at and realize that it starts with a noble cause. We're going to defeat communism, and it shouldn't stand that radicalization that Brzezinski always bragged about, and he never denied that he was responsible for radicalizing Islam, because he says, I defeated communism. I mean, that needs to be sorted out. It needs to be understood from a political viewpoint as well as an economic viewpoint. But I think that remains to be seen. And Daniel, thank you for being with us today, even though from Virginia.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for
very good. Being. And I want to thank our viewers for joining in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.